You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Bald Move Pulp, the officially unofficial podcast for Loki on Disney Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about season 1, episode 5, titled Journey into Mystery. Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
I love this episode. This episode put a big smile on my face. I thought it was funny. I thought it was epic. I thought it looked good. You know, we had another big, like, wide open fantasy space, and they struggled with that in the previous episode, I think episode 3. I thought they crushed it here, and this is just a big, long love letter to people that really like kind of deep lore of Marvel. And again, I don't even get a lot of these references because, again, this is kind of more Avengers, Thor stuff, and I'm more on the mutant side of the Marvel house. But, you know, some of these are big enough memes that I got. And, you know, since we had an extra day to prepare, I looked into a lot more. Down to the title of the episode, Journey into Mystery. Journey into Mystery is a horror sci-fi anthology that Marvel ran for years. And then around, I think, issue 83, they debuted a character called the Mighty Thor. And he was a breakout hit. And right around the time that Loki showed up, his brother, and they started to start building out the Asgardian stuff, they split him off into his own issue, and he's maintained one ever since. So it's like I said, it's a lot of clearly Waldron's got a lot of love for the lore and the mystique of this universe, and I thought it was all on display, and I'm really, really excited to see what it all comes down to next week. I remain deeply skeptical about some of the wilder, not even wilder, but more impactful theories about who is behind this stuff, because I just I've hinted about this for a couple of weeks. I just don't think Disney is going to deploy. You know, they're not going to have Thanos 2.0 show up at the finale episode of one of their limited series. I just don't.
And before they've even kicked off the next phase. I mean, yeah, if the next phase is anything like the phase before it, they're going to take their sweet time with it.
And here's the thing. I'm not saying they're not connected. What you know what this is? This is what would usually be a web series. You know, anytime there's been like a web series that leads up to like a new season of The Walking Dead or a new season of this or a new season of that, you never have to watch. Everyone, you know, before we start covering a series that has this kind of shit, everyone's like, oh, you got to watch all this and you got to do this, you got to do that, or you won't possibly. How could you possibly? No, that's the bonus material that they designed to be indulged in by the like super nerds. And when they release content for normies, they're going to make sure that they're handhelded enough to understand that. So if you like the extra material, and I really like this extra material, I just don't think it's going to be required viewing for Avengers 4 or Guardians of the Galaxy 3 or, you know, Thor Love and Thunder. I just don't. But having said that, there's still just tons and tons for the cottage industry of Marvel, you know, analyzers to tear into. Now, I was, when I watched this episode, I was a little nervous about what you would think about it, because I think a lot of this hits on some of your really weak points in comic book love. So what did you think of the episode?
Oh, I thought it was fun. Yeah, I've given myself over to Loki early on, right? I think I talked about how, like, early on was looking for, you know, some timey-wimey, trickery, like, logic-based thing that's going to blow my mind in a sort of Sixth Sense kind of way. And, like, episode 2, I think I came back and was like, you know, this show probably isn't going to be that. I think I'll just, like, kind of go with the flow wherever Loki's going to take me. And I think that served me well over the course of the last 5 episodes, because I had no problems with this. They're creating a lot of just sort of thin air kind of stuff in this episode. Like, oh, there's a void, which is a place where, you know, we send all of the garbage, and there's this Eliath, and there's a place beyond it. And in some cases, they're even sort of using that against me in the episode in a weird way, right? Mm. Like Ravonna is conspiring with the time AI, whatever clock interface minutes. She's got. Yeah, the Miss Minutes to sort of like bamboozle Sylvie. And I found myself bamboozled by that in a little bit. I was like, boy, they're really pushing me here. Just going to make some stuff up on the spot, huh? About this prototype ship they've got that can take them through the other made up thing they just made up 5 minutes ago. And then that turns out to actually be made up, right? So,
yeah,
that was kind of fun. And then I continue to appreciate the stuff they're doing thematically with the Lokis. And God, there are a lot of Lokis in this episode. But specifically, I want to say our Lokis at this point, which I think are Sylvie and who I'm just going to continue to call Loki. Even though he's not the real our Loki who died, from Thanos. But like, I found it fun. So no problems here.
And I even think that like, you know, Michael Waldron was talking about how he's like really influenced by the Leftovers is one of the things I got excited. And as I was watching, I'm like, yeah, I see a lot of International Assassins Hotel here where our protagonist wakes up in a reality that makes no sense and is constantly like defying him to make sense of it, and it's got a lot of comedy. Yeah. The thing is that this episode, I mean, the two Lokis holding hands and, you know, conjuring this smoke monster just doesn't have the same emotional weight as Kevin singing, you know, Homeward Bound.
I like they think so, but I imagine a lot of people would disagree, but.
But on the other hand, there was what, 18 episodes that led up, hour-long episodes that led up to that moment that got us to that place where the character would make us care so much about such a silly, where even the main character is talking about how this is just stupid, you know? But that was the magic of the Leftovers, and I felt like Loki kind of sort of tapped in there. It just, that's the thing where you just, you know, it's just never going to, you know, they're never going to hit that high note. And I don't know why I thought that in five episodes they could, but I definitely think it's like, I'm starting to see, like, I'm, you know, a lot of this, I was like, oh, you're going to fucking name check the Leftovers. Well, then I'm going to be arms crossed, eyes narrowed, waiting for me to like fat tears rolling down my cheeks at some point in these finales. And I don't know, maybe they'll get their next episode.
I think for a lot of people, they already have, right? If you are way into this story, if you're way into these characters and invested in this relationship, I think that moment at the end of this episode where they join hands, you know, two Lokis finally come together. They're, you know, the whatever they have is still sort of unspoken, but they both understand it. They're both cool with it.
And that's
a powerful moment, right? They come together to defeat whatever this huge epic thing is. That's a very Marvel moment. And I think the people who are into Marvel for the things that Marvel does will be very happy with that.
Yeah. And I think that you're like, even Mobius and Loki's genuine hug, like that all felt very earned. And that's pretty incredible that you can build that relationship just on two actors' charisma in, you know, four or five episodes of them fucking around. And I think that, you know, like every once in a while, Marvel can. Usually Marvel does awesome moments well, you know, like Ant-Man showing up at the airport of Captain America 3, you know, as Giant Man, you know, and just like, even if you don't know who Ant-Man was, just a spectacle of that is so good and funny and just awesome. And sometimes that they can give it that like spine tingling. Like I thought one of the few times that Marvel hit that gear is the scene opening up in Endgame where Clint, you know, Hawkeye realizes his family's been snapped. You know, his whole fucking family, like the horror of that settling in. And then sometimes they can do both. Like when Cap picks up Mjolnir, that's both supremely awesome and kind of spine tingling all at the same time because of what it means and what it. So, you know, I don't think that they got there on either. But it was awesome. Like when classic Loki manages to conjure up this Asgard through the Supreme. And I know this is some stuff that you like, I mean, this, you just like, this is like, there's some things like pro wrestling and soap operas where like the emotion is more important than what's actually happening. And I think comic books work that way. And that like, in, and I think it can get silly, but like, unless you can get on board with a man in green pajamas screening, you know, just straining against a blue screen, and just know that, like, that's a superhuman effort of will that he's doing to be heroic, and that's why it's going to succeed, just because it needs to. Like, unless you can kind of get up for those moments there.
That's a big ask. It's kind
of
hard. Me.
And I know it gets ridiculous because, like, not, like a lot of times in some of the shittier X-Men movies where it's just literally six characters, you know, doing that with garbage swirling around their head.
Apocalypse,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, it can get a little too Dragon Ball Z. But at its best, it's you know, this moment of heroism and sacrifice that classic Loki makes at the end of a very long life of reflection and regret and raging against your inability to change things until it's too late.
Yeah, I bet that was a huge moment for a lot of people. When he shows up and you realize what he's conjuring. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's I thought it was cool. And again, I'm excited to see what the actual fuck is at the end of the rainbow next episode. I just don't think it's going to, like I said, I just don't think it's going to kick off the next phase. These are, again, going to be at best webisodes and compared to, like, the mainline MCU. And we're, by the way, doing one. We're getting back into the MCU main swing, sequence swing with Black Widow tonight.
Are we? Is there, how much continuity is there going to be for a dead characters movie?
You know, I've already heard a bunch of people praising this movie and saying that it's a lot more relevant than you think. But I'm going to remain skeptical until I see it. But I think, you know, especially as timey-wimey as the next phase of Marvel is going to be, it would not shock me at all if there is some impactful things about this kind of prequel. And also, so we'll see. But I just want to let people know that if you want our opinion on whether you should see the next Marvel, I mean, no one needs that. You either know you're going to see Black Widow or you don't already right here. But if you want to know what we think about it, we'll have a full spoiler review out for our club members and Patreons tonight. And then a general, you know, no spoiler review for everybody else. Mm-hmm. If you want to check that out again tonight, Thursday or Friday morning, whenever you get to it.
For sure. And I think we'll talk more about what we think is at the end of the rainbow here at the end of this podcast, probably the end of the recap. But maybe we should get into it.
Let's do it.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers have a chance to exercise their rights under the Patreon pact we've made by voting for the next pulp movie that Jim and I will be covering. If you're one of the elite few backers at the executive producer level, don't miss your chance to influence us. Hurry over to patreon.com/baldmove and vote in the latest movie poll before it closes on Wednesday morning.
And for all other club members, we've got an all-new episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron this Friday afternoon. Catch the live stream at 1 p.m. to interact with us and your fellow munchers over on Patreon, or you can wait for the podcast to drop later that day.
If you want even more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcasts, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
All right, we start off with what I'm calling a visual tone poem. My notes reflect that. It just says elevator, wall, timekeepers, ruins, the void. and Eliath. It's just kind of like a, hey, remember where we are? And here's a glimpse of something you didn't see before that is very frightening in the form of Eliath.
There's also that visual technique, and they use a lot on the Green Knight trailer that I'm really looking forward to, where they're essentially upside down and the camera is kind of like slowly to give you an idea that you're through the looking glass or you're through some kind of area of madness. And they do that through the timekeeper's door into the void, because there's no physical connection. There's just a thematic one there. And I don't know, like it worked for me when we hit the void and they just went full on the basso profundo version of the Loki theme with like a sound like now with 20 tubas.
Yeah.
The blah, blah, blah. I thought that shit was cool. And then you're instantly like running for your life. Like, what an effective way to begin this episode.
Yeah. No, the music is great throughout this entire episode, and probably like I haven't noticed it a ton, but probably this entire series so far.
I think this has been the best musical cues, because like the other stuff has been recycled Avengers and kind of like watered down, but like I feel like someone really put their back into this one because it's a hell of a main theme and score
for sure. So then we, you know, get the 30 seconds of Marvel Studios stuff, and then we come back to Ravonna, in order to sort of stall her death, tells Sylvie that Loki's still alive, and then she explains how that's possible, you know, given what she knows about the void and its role in the TVA. And Sylvie decides she's going to trust Ravonna to help her find Loki.
And like, I guess I never, we were talking about this pre-podcast, I never really thought that Lady Loki, Sylvie, had fallen, like, you know, completely fallen for the Renslayer, Judge Renslayer's bullshit. But also, to the extent that she was willing to trust, I think that there is a lot of good evidence for that, because, you know, we've seen the three TVA agents that she's exposed to the truth, you know, C-20, B-15, Mobius. Their reaction is outrage and wanting to kind of tear the system down. So like, I guess it didn't seem super crazy that like, now that Ravonna has confronted hardcore with the artificiality of the timekeepers, and it does seem like it genuinely shocked her, that she would kind of like want to throw in with her. I guess that seems like it would track.
Yeah, I guess, but
she's
so
a Loki, so she doesn't fully trust.
Yeah. I don't know. It was also like all of this under duress stuff too, right? Like, you've got a woman here who's standing in front of you, pointing a spear at your neck, saying it's time to kill you now. Mm-hmm. And then Ravonna says, hey, we could save Loki. And I'm telling all of you, I'm telling this to you totally willingly, not under any kind of, you know, threat of my life or anything in the moment. I just am volunteering this. It was just like, well, she would say anything at this point to get you to spare her life, right? Why are you just believing this coming from such, you know, such a like nemesis of yours? It seemed a little bit of a stretch to me. But by the end of it, it was all proven to be, you know, exactly what it was. It was a stretch, a ruse.
Right. But to what extent? Because that's the thing, like, I'm not sure I believe, you know, like Renslayer still is like, well, I still want to get to the bottom and get who's behind this. But the question is why? Because she doesn't want to join forces to tear it down. Like, and they're, and they contrast, the only thing I can contrast it with Loki's stated belief that Sylvia doesn't want to run this thing. She wants to tear it down. So I wonder if Renslayer is along the other line where she's like, thinks this is bullshit, but she still believes in the end goal and kind of wants to. Well, the problem with this plan isn't that it's horrific. Ends justify the means bullshit. The problem is the right person's not making those calls. Right. And I need to be that person. I wonder if they're going in that direction with it.
Totally could be. There's a scene later on where she says, like, call up all the information on the beginning or. Yeah, the beginning of the TVA, the beginning of time, and then has like a smile as she walks off at the end of that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, was tonally at odds with the sort of emergency situation she was in, which made me think something else is going on here. Whether she's like a Loki herself who's trying to get to the bottom of the TVA and using the TVA to do that.
Well, see, I think that might be because like she just had a conversation with B-15 where B-15 confidently said, you're never going to find the timekeepers before she does because you just want to and she needs to.
Right.
And I think as her is like, well, I've got the fucking files for the entire universe. So we'll put her wanting and my having access to this. And I think it's more of like, fuck you, B-15. We'll see about that. But could be. Who knows?
So I like, you know, the explanation of all this. Granted, all of this stuff is made up. It doesn't need logical consistency.
Right.
But it makes a certain amount of sense within the universe they've created with this void where it's essentially like a... Well, I mean, it's literally in some cases, as we see later in this episode, a junkyard, right? Where they throw all their trash, which is all of the people that they've had to prune from the timeline. They throw them there. And then Eliath comes in and, you know, he does cleanup. That's pretty cool. I think this void concept is pretty neat. It gets a little weird with time at the end, like what's beyond the void where all timelines meet. Who knows? And I guess that's what we're going to explore next episode. Sort of exciting, sort of confounding. I don't know.
It is well thought out in like the best kind of like Marvel way where it's like, well, we've all read Einstein and we know matter can't be created nor destroyed. So,
well,
obviously we top it into a time void.
Right.
And then an entropy monster eats it. So obviously matter and energy are conserved. It just goes into the entropy monster and presumably it gets bigger. But it's like it's Marvel. It's like, hey, they have the best way of lampshading. Like, well, this is obviously a nonsense physical thing. So we'll just invent another nonsense. It's kind of like Star Trek with the Heisenberg compensator, you know?
Yeah.
It's like faster than light travel and matter teleportation is probably impossible because, of course, how could you possibly... You know, if you measure someone's stuff down to the molecular level, then you can't, you know, it's got. And so, yeah, you got a Heisenberg compensator that just kind of fucking compensates for that shit. Right.
Right. It's future tech. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
They kept me on the hook here in this scene. And then there's another scene later with Sylvie and Ravonna where she explains about the prototype ship. And I was like, OK, you fucking lost me. This is bullshit.
Gotcha.
This all sounds stupid. And then it was revealed that, oh, yeah, it is all bullshit. None of it is real. None of it exists. So, I don't know. They had fun with that. And I had fun with it, too.
Also, thematically, it's very satisfying for them to have this like ultimate confrontation in the place where their relationship began. You know, like this is the courtroom where Sylvie was found to be in sentence to be purging and. Mm-hmm. And she self-purged. Like, I don't know. Just there's a lot of like really cool, like I said, thematic symmetry. That they can get away with this make-believe science stuff.
You think Ravonna's the only judge? I would imagine there are a lot of Nexus events that happen just all the time. What is the queue like?
There's so many little hints and stuff, like the fact, and I don't know what it's hints to, because like remember we had a question about the coffee cup stains that she said Mobius made, and he's like, I don't remember making those. Does that mean that there were other agents besides Mobius? Does that mean that like every time a agent remembers their jet ski past, they get mind wiped again?
I think so.
You know, like what's special? We got some feedback about this, but what's special about the variants that become judges and enforcers and clerks and stuff versus the ones that just get sent to the purge zone?
Yeah.
I think those are interesting questions. I hope we get answers to next episode when we confront whoever is behind all this shit.
Yeah, we'll see. So then we go back to Loki, who's with all the other Lokis, and they're running from Eliath. But Loki has like 1,000 questions, and he stops them to get answers. And they tell him, look, Eliath is intended to devour the things that TVA sends into the void. He also finds out that the youngest of them, which I guess they call Kid Loki, probably the youngest. I guess we don't know the alligator's age. the youngest of those
small.
Killed Thor, which is pretty impressive to Loki.
That's causes a deaf invariance. Yeah, sure.
Then they go underground, literally.
Yeah. I love all this stuff. I love Alligator, Loki. I love Tom Hiddleston's performance of like the, like, hey, look, I'm going to give you this. I'm going to give you that. But a lot of the stuff doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And the idea that like there's tons of Lokis because they're exceptionally good at surviving, escaping, and doing all, they're like the cockroaches of the Marvel universe. So there's just tons and tons and tons of like an amazing amount of Loki variants. We're going to find out.
Yeah.
But it makes a lot of sense. And also like in my second watch through, and I'd kind of gone through a couple of the early videos that are showing Easter eggs. But if you go through and think that color green equals Loki, there's a green car. I noticed that Mobius's pizza car has got the license plate GRN green. Like, are there inanimate Loki versions? Is there like a Loki car variant?
I suppose. How could an inanimate Loki create a variance? Create a Nexus event?
I don't know, but also Marvel is owned by Disney, which also owns Pixar, which also owns the movie Cars, which posits there's a whole universe of car and transportation based sentient life. So like, are some of these vehicles from Nexus events that happened in the Pixar version of the Marvel universe where Loki's a tow truck or some shit? I don't know, but it's a cool idea to think about. And if you go through and look at like all the stuff that's either green in or has green license plates or has like Loki low, there's like a lot of, you know, Loki shit just floating around here, mm-hmm. Which again is super funny and super entertaining.
Some Thor shit floating around too. There's a miniature Thor in a bottle as we kind of scroll down to the underground bunker.
Do you want to talk about this stuff now? Because this is where like a lot of the Easter eggs for the series are coming up.
Yeah, I'm curious what you got.
I also just like how they. One of my favorite gags in this episode is how they keep Gator Loki in on the jokes and action. Like mm-hmm. there's like four or five times where they cut the alligator Loki for a reaction shot. And so alligator, like what the hell is he going to do? Sometimes they give him some hissing dialogue, but most of the time it's just like his little transparent eyelid blinks or something. I just think, I don't know why, but I think that shit is super funny.
I like him drinking wine. That's my favorite. Part.
Gallons, just like pouring it in his gullet, box wine. Okay, so let's talk about the first one. Is there's a helicopter. This is one of these things where like I knew about the jokes and the memes, but I didn't know where it came from. But there's a helicopter labeled Thanos.
I saw that.
And I guess when they were doing the Infinity War, because I remember like Infinity War was huge for Marvel. And even though it didn't involve a lot of the mutants, and that's weird because a lot of the other crossover, summer crossover events that Marvel did, like Secret Wars and stuff, did. This was almost exclusively like Avengers and a Silver Surfer and Fantastic Four kind of thing. It left the mutant side. But there was always like they had these like little Infinity Stone plots running through a lot of the comics, you know. And I guess there's this one version of Black Cat, which is for some reason just called, she's just a, you know, essentially Catwoman character in the Marvel Universe. And she had stolen an Infinity Gem from Thanos, and he was chasing her all over New York to try to get it. And he had to use a he's Thanos, and he has to use a helicopter to chase after her. And it looks just like this helicopter. It says Thanos on it. The Infinity Stone gets caught by a little boy. He uses it to make infinite ice cream. And the plot ends up with Thanos being arrested by the New York police and packed into a squad car in handcuffs.
God.
The Mad Titan, the Quarter of Death, he who punched the Hulk so much it scared him, mm-hmm. who killed Loki, broke the neck of a god with a thought, is being meekly led away in bracelets by New York's finest. So this is a huge meme. And I guess like this, the James Gunn, the director of Guardians of the Galaxy, has been trying to get this kind of gonzo shit into the stuff.
That Twitter post of his from ages ago. Yeah.
So they finally worked in that. And then the little frog Thor that's in a glass jar and buried in the dirt is from another obscure storyline. That's like takes two different Marvel things that kind of clash together. There's this guy that got cursed by a witch to be a frog and has a whole life in Central Park in New York with other frogs. And at some point in the story, Thor has to ditch Mjolnir somewhere. And one of Odin's goats stamps Mjolnir so hard it like dislodges a sliver of the hammer. And this frog gets a hold of the sliver, and as soon as he touches it, it turns into a tiny version of Thor's hammer and grants him the powers of Thor proportionate to the size. So he's got superhuman strength proportionate to that of a frog. He's got superhuman command of thunder and lightning, but on. So that is, this is the, called the Mighty Throg. And he somehow got sideways with the TVA and got dumped into the void. So imagine, again, some
you're a kid. It's 19 fucking 85 or something, whenever that issue came out, and you go to your newsstand, you go to your comic shop, and you pick this one up off the shelf, and you're like, fuck yeah, I'm so excited to get the latest Thor. And you open it up, and it's 15 pages of fucking frogs in Central Park living lives.
See,
is this the shit that people lived for in the 80s, and the comic book fans lived for? Because
I can only speak for myself.
I'd be disappointed.
But I did love my giant-sized issues of the X-Men that came out every summer that had shit like they would go to a different dimension where, I forget the name of this guy, but this is a dude that's kind of like Jabba the Hutt, and he's a he's essentially an interdimensional cable TV executive.
Okay.
And there's another Marvel character, Longshot, that was essentially the star of one of his TV shows, like the protagonist. And he was genetically engineered to be, I don't know, super strong. He's got lightweight bones. He's got a mutant enhanced sense of luck, so things just kind of work out. And it's kind of like a combination interdimensional cable Truman Show. But the X-Men he's more of a silly character because, again, he's like, imagine like a Truman Show, you know, like Ed Harris in a Truman Show. Only he's Jabba the Hutt and he's maniacal about ratings. Mm-hmm. And like there was like this constant variations of X-Men. Like there's like one issue had the X women where it was like feminized versions of all the X-Men and like, you know, weird, sexy outfits, like sexy version of Wolverine, Colossus with enormous chrome breasts.
What did they do for Storm?
She was just like,
she was just Storm.
Well, that's a good question because any of the women that were already women were just sexed up. You know, when you had a Deep Space Nine episode where they went to the mirror universe and you had sexy Major Kira.
Because they're not already sexed up enough in their regular forms. Come on. I've seen Storm.
This is 90s comics where Marvel used to unironically do swimsuit episodes.
Christ.
But have Jim Lee draw Rogue wearing and Psylocke wearing a fucking string bikini and shit. So they pander. They pandered a bit.
Apparently.
But they had X babies, like Jim Henson X-Men style Muppet Babies universe. So it was like, yeah, a lot of times this is where like it's kind of fan service. You go fucking buck wild and you wouldn't want to, like, I don't know how many single focus issues Throg would sell. Like if they had a Mighty Throg number one, I don't know how long that series would run before people would get bored of the concept. But yeah.
So these were mainline? These were like, this month the Thor issue is just gonna be this.
They're just kind of in the margins for fun shit. You know, same way like Peter Porker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham. He's a character, but is he a big character? Does he have long running series and arcs and stuff? No, but he is a fun part of the Marvel lore, and Loki is just giving you a glimpse of the shit that Marvel gets up to when they get bored with their own content. Because I think Marvel is a little bit more fun than DC, you know? They're a little bit more kind of like not afraid to, of course, I might have DC fans. Well, you fucking haven't seen the fucking Justice League babies issues of. You're right. I didn't read a lot of DC, but, this stuff was a lot of fun, and it just was rapid fire, and I'm sure there's like probably three times as many that I didn't see.
Yeah.
I just saw a
shitload of lunch trays. I don't know if this was like buried under a school, like they just dumped a whole school into the void or what, but
yeah. And they're in a warped bowling alley that's in a underground bunker. So you were bigger into Lost than I was. I noped out after two seasons. I guess there's a lot. Seppenwall was talking about all the many allusions to Lost here. You have a smoke monster. You've got an underground hatch. You've got, I don't know. He listed off like half a dozen allusions to Lost and like episode titles and stuff. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, definitely the smoke monster and the hatch are two things you could point at and say, yeah, that's very Lostian.
But Eliath, it was created back in 1993 or 94. So, like, he predates. I thought that was a little weak. You know, it's like he's, yeah, he's a, Marvel does have biting. A smoke monster, but
yeah, I don't think they're intentionally biting anything off of Lost. I think it's just there are similarities, certainly.
There's a mood.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get to the next scene. Ravonna gets files on the founding of the TVA, or she's pulling them up. But Sylvie wants to know about the time after the void. And Ravonna says, that's impossible to know what's beyond it. But then the AI suggests, hey, we got this prototype ship that can get us all beyond the void. Well, it turns out it's not real. It was all just a stalling tactic. And the guards bust in. Sylvie jumps behind the docket. What the fuck is this called? Where the judges sit?
The throne. The judicial throne. The bench. Oh, the bench. That's what it's called.
The bench. Thank you.
It's the bench. Approach the bench. Yeah.
Yes. And then prunes herself. Self-pruning here.
Mmm. Hot.
Which seems like it makes total sense, given what Sylvie knows about where Loki is and the state of that place. And she's got this Tim pad. Totally makes sense to go there, get Loki, and just get out.
Yeah, and I think it's the only... I thought it tracked, too. And also, like, I also like the fact that they show that Sylvie is not 100% bought into Renslayer's bullshit because she doesn't let go of the handshake.
Right.
She knows there's just a fix in. And like, that's like, because I was thinking like, oh, this, the way it's played where Miss Minutes is like, oh, what about the temporal time ship or spaceship?
And everyone is like, the
prototype. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm like, oh, this is the dumbest shit ever. But Sylvia's smart enough to know that she still had the upper hand and could boost that time pad off of her and could get behind the bench and fuck off. So.
I mean, the trouble here was I had thought Sylvie was totally duped because she's already trusted her this far. The woman who, you know, ruined her life and was going to void her and was telling her under duress, hey, I've got this super secret way for you to get back all the things you love, for me to give you back the life I took. No. Why would you believe that? She'd say anything. And so I was already like primed for Sylvie to believe, just like fall hook, line, and sinker for whatever Ravonna said. So when they did the switcheroo and she wasn't totally hooked by it.
Gotcha.
I was like, okay, cool. Next up, the Lokis tell their stories. The eldest one here, classic Loki, apparently got pruned because he was lonely. He spent a lot of time out on a planet and then eventually missed his brother and his family and all that and decided to head back, and they caught him. TVA did. And then he, you know, declares that they're all the gods of outcasts. Loki doesn't like that idea. So he jumps up. He declares, I'm going to go kill Eliath and I could really use your guys' help. They consider it for a moment, then laugh in his face. So he goes to exit the bunker and then runs smack into a whole nother band of Lokis. It's like 10 of them. I don't know. A bunch.
A bunch. Yeah. Like, yeah, a couple dozen, maybe even.
Sure.
There's a lot of important stuff that happens here.
Yes.
You know, like classic Loki opining that the Loki's real problem is their over-reliance on their blades, which is this interesting connection to like there's this kind of ancient view of magic that like the iron disrupts it. You know, like iron is poisonous to fairies. It disrupts magical energies and stuff like that. So there's a little bit. I don't know how much of this goes into the Marvel universe, but it's kind of like a long magical trope that like, you know, magic is best effective in absence of bared blades, etc. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
And it would explain like why magic would fade as society starts to build.
Yeah,
right?
Another. Yeah, I didn't even put that two, but like, yeah, the industrial age pretty much. Yeah, that's why you don't see so many fairies around. You know, you can't get in any way from fucking bear
out to the woods. You'll see a Sasquatch. You'll see a bunch of fairies. Yeah.
Yeah, we've destroyed their natural environments. I thought, and the fact that he tricked the Thanos so well that he was able to essentially just slink away and kind of like just reflect on what a shit he's been. And like the fact that a lot of the pain in his life is caused by himself. It's kind of like he had all this self-reflection and improvement and meditation that brought him to the point where he started missing his brother. And then when he went to try to take, you know, to take us first, he said, literally first step I took to get off that planet and reunite, I was instantly grabbed by the TVA. So it's like, there's this, like, it's not just the Lokis are doomed to be evil. It's just a variance of them that get like some kind of emotional help and do some personal growth are instantly seen as variants and purged.
Yeah, so which is one of the things that was making me think this might be another evil version of Loki that's trying to, you know, run the TVA here.
And that's a real question I have, because like, so you got this old Loki, and you got to think about like how old. We know like Odin's a lot older than Thor because he's been, as his father. It's like how old, how long has Loki had to be around to practice his sorcery to get to be like, you know, 50, 67, however old Richard E. Grant is in real life. Mm-hmm. But also like makes sense that when he busts out his like elaborate magic at the end, that's beyond any of the Lokis here. Yeah, he's just had a lot of time to practice it. So I thought all that stuff was really cool. I love the detail of baby Loki drinking high C where they're all drinking boxed wine. And Loki concluding that like this is super tropey. I mean, how many times we just did Predator 2 weeks ago and Arnold, if it bleeds, we can kill it. Like this is Loki's logic. If it's alive, I can kill it somehow.
Yeah.
And he's going to go out. He's going to go out and try to do it. There's also I saw the boastful Loki that we thought might be like a Thor variant. Did you notice that Mjolnir seems to be made out of a railroad tie? Or no, a railroad, like a segment of railroad rail.
Oh, no, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, like he cut like a foot-long section, spray-painted it gold.
So he's a bullshitter? Is he bullshit Loki?
I think, the subtitles called him boastful Loki. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I think he's probably sitting there trying to be like, yeah, I got Mjolnir off my brother when I beat his ass after I got done beating Iron Man and humiliating. Yeah.
I guess I assumed that when he was talking all that stuff about beating Captain America and like half the Avengers, that he was pruned because of that. That was his Nexus event. What would his Nexus event be if he's just bullshitting?
I don't know. That's a very good question. Because you're right. You're right. But yeah, I think that everyone's reaction, including Gator Loki, leads me to believe that he's just a bullshitter.
Yeah.
And again, the subtitles labeling it as boastful is a boastful Loki, classic Loki, and kid Loki.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's a bullshitter.
I don't think alligator Loki gets one, but come on. It's alligator Loki.
Yeah, of course.
I like how they're laying tracks for the end of this episode right here in this conversation. You know, you talked about how he was isolated and had a lot of time to work on his magic, and he doesn't use blades. And so that's another bonus. He just uses magic, makes him the most powerful. And at the end, he comes back and they need him, right? And that's the thing, like being alone was his bugaboo here. And so when he comes back and shows that none of them are alone, that's why I'm saying like this could be a super powerful moment for people who are really into these characters in the story.
Oh, 100%. And I think that this is already the most tightly scripted Marvel show. Like,
yeah,
you know, they fucked around a lot in WandaVision. Mm-hmm. They actually fucked around a lot in Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Oh, really? This, like, more than Wanda? The first three episodes were them fucking around.
Man, I feel like there's like three whole episodes that was just there so they could justify the length of the series.
Oh, okay.
That was just like, oh, just these are just, you know, wild goose chases, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, like, I mean, some people say like episode three was but no, episode three is where you had to believe that the two Lokis formed the human connection.
Mm-hmm.
Like if that hour wasn't spent there, then literally the whole fucking series falls apart. So no, that wasn't a waste. That, yeah, you know,
no, you're right. In retrospect, like you need that moment for this to happen, for this episode. It's
no,
just
like
I think like the reason I was disappointed is because I was expecting something trickier in the plot. But that was my own fault.
No, like when Falcon and the Winter Soldier beat a confession out of a bad guy and then they go on an hour to find out and turns out that the princess is in another castle at the end of that episode. That's a wasted hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the episode three was many things, but it was crucial to like literally the rest of the series happening. So I think this has been really tightly plotted and everything kind of like not a lot of fat on its bones.
Yeah, for sure. So then Sylvie wakes up in the void and has to run from Eliath, and a pizza delivery car driven by Mobius swoops in and picks her up. I gotta say that this was funny, but not as funny as what Mr. Wilson's brother did in Idiocracy. His car was much better.
Which one is, I don't remember that.
I can't remember the name of it. I don't know if his car had a name, but it's when he was in the arena having to go mano a mano with Dildozer. And they strap something to his car that is great.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. Okay. I almost just speculated in the dark. Was there a giant donger like screwed through the? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Of course. Exactly. Of course.
But it's still very funny. I mean, him driving up in this I assume it's a pizza delivery car. It's got a big slice of pizza on the roof.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I was trying to like, man, is that the same car from like Toy Story? I don't think it is. I'm not sure like if this is like there's some any deep lore. The license plate said green. So again, I think canonically this is a Loki car pizza delivery variant,
mm-hmm.
Which got purged because of course it did. But there's the thing I think is slightly weak in the episode, like when Sylvie's running from Eliath and she like is vaulting over a piece of debris, she like accidentally enchants it long enough to make a connection to see the decrepit castle that's actually lying beyond Eliath. And like, I mean, it's a comic book thing. You gotta believe that these heroes can grab a tendril of smoke and fucking mind fuck this cosmic force.
Mm-hmm.
If they work together and believe in the power of love and Loki enough. But like, I thought it was a little weak to the extent that like, I didn't even know what the fuck happened the first time I watched this. Like, she's jumping, all of a sudden green flash and she sees this vision. Like, what the fuck? But you're supposed to understand she accidentally enchanted it for like a brief second, which gave her the idea that she can do it again. But you just, again, you just have to follow that logical leap.
And they will explain it several more times to you before the episode is over. So yeah, if you didn't like put that together, which I certainly didn't either, then you will.
Yeah.
So then the new Lokis and the old Lokis all betray each other and fight while our Loki tries to avoid them. Eventually classic Loki, kid Loki and alligator Loki all escape the bunker with our Loki, and he convinces the others to help him kill Eliath.
It's another great scene. The like, just a clusterfuck of betrayal.
This is a lot of fun.
I love Tom Hiddleston's. It's a very master and commander curse, but he like fucks it up. Like, I think that the properly would be half witted, beef faced scrubs, but he goes with beef witted, half faced scrubs, which is really funny. Alligator Loki just horfin the President Loki's hand and him just high pitched screaming at it. It's great. And our Loki kind of just like high stepping his way, like in this just really exaggerated physical comedy way of like getting himself out of the situation. It was just really fun. And all the Lokis just fucking gangbang, you know, going at it, hammer and tong. It's a great scene. And it also allows these core group of Lokis we identify with, their frustrations with each other, to boil over. Yeah. Like, this is why we can't get anywhere, because we don't trust. We always betray. We're stuck in these cycles, and what can we possibly do about it? Because like, otherwise, it's a really hairpin curve for these characters to go from just like, it's useless to make plans, there's nothing we can do, we just have to run and survive, to like, oh, sure, we'll get in with your suicidal plan. But it kind of works, because you just had the futility of what you're doing thrown into your face, that like, you know, you find a chill group of four Lokis that you can just sit and drink wine and pass the eons. No, one of them is going to eventually get an itchy Loki finger and want to betray you.
Yeah.
And it's just the multiple cascading betrayals is so good. So funny.
Yeah. And I think it, you know, further stresses how important the connection between Sylvie and Loki is. Right. That.
Yeah.
And potentially how like threatening that could be to another version of Loki, because Loki's team up, they become more dangerous, right, to other Lokis. So,
more powerful.
I thought thematically this was very good.
Yeah, they're like a radioactive isotope. You get more of them together and it gives you more power, but it's also an unstable situation because, you know, you have an army of Lokis. You're very powerful, but every one of those Lokis is going to be waiting for the point that they can betray you and take the army into their system. So it
does two things, right? It shows us like the power of multiple Lokis working together. And that comes into play at the end with Sylvie and Loki, but also it shows us it begs us to ask the question about like what happens, which they address like head on later in this episode, where Sylvie and Loki are talking about like what happens after the, you know, whatever happens beyond the void, whether we, you know, when we come through this on the other side, what do you go rule a timeline? And what are you going to do? Have you thought about it? No, I haven't. Well, maybe we can do whatever together. That's like the question is there. Are they going to, you know, part ways? What happens? Will they stay together? All that stuff is kind of enhanced by what they're doing here throughout the episode.
100%. And also, like, again, this episode's so efficient. They got Richard Grant like scornfully talking about Loki's glorious purpose, but then that will become such an awesome line 15 minutes from now.
Yeah.
When he's sacrificing his life to give these Lokis a chance, you know, when he could just tuck tail and run. It's really, really good for an MCU show.
Yeah. And it also shows you, you know, some of these Lokis do want to change, right?
Yep.
And we see that the Tom Hiddleston Loki also wants that. But there are many other versions of themselves which don't want change. But you know that there is a kernel somewhere. In as much as like, hey, this is part of each of the other Lokis, then maybe that could be dug out and change, real change could happen. So,
yeah. And there's a couple other things. I can't remember if it's this scene or the scene right before where our Loki is saying, I don't even know. He's because like we began the series by saying, like, you got to understand that this Loki is not our Loki who tried to stop, you know, Thanos and has kind of loves his. Has become to find a way to love his family and have like a you know, troubled peace with his brother and kind of an anti-hero. This is just back, you know, this is enslaving the whole earth, use it as his footstool, Loki.
Yeah.
But he has this line where he's like, I don't even know how long New York was. Was it yesterday? Was it months, years? Because it is like, how many times, how long did he spend in that time loop jail?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long did he spend like at the edge of disasters with Sylvie? Like, there's just so timey wimey that like you don't know. So it gives them a little bit of like, it might seem wild if like this Loki made all this personal development over a matter of a couple of days or hours. But if you've got, you know, potentially weeks, months, even years of virtual time that's elapsed to the point that where like Loki can't even tell. It makes everything else work a little bit better. So also, again, hats off whoever architected all this shit, because it's been impressive so far.
Think how far they took Loki in the several movies that he was in, right? And the runtime of those movies, it can't be much longer than the runtime of this series.
Especially
so
if
far.
You're talking about just the stuff involving Loki and giving him development. Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong at all.
So Mobius and Sylvie leave Eliath in the rear view, literally. But Sylvie decides that the angry cloud might be the answer and declares, hey, we're going back. I was a little puzzled as to why she would do this, why she would just assume that, hey, that giant horrible thing in the sky, that's where we go, until they revealed later that, you know, there was some shit with Ravonna that made her think that. And also she mind melded with it.
Yeah. And there's a lot. So there's a lot of this dialogue that I think is setting us up for Sylvie betraying our Loki. Just keep in mind when, you know, Owen Wilson is talking about, man, I thought we were the good guys. And I guess that's what happens when he thinks the ends justify the means.
Yeah.
And her almost immediate response is like, look, the only thing that matters is getting out of here and finding out who's behind this.
Yeah.
She's motivated by vengeance. If that's literally the like, that's ends justifying the means, because the end is the only thing that's important. So however you get there is not going to matter. I think they're setting us up for the brutal gut punch, which is Sylvie is going to be one of these deluded Lokis that is willing to betray another Loki to get to her. And our Loki, who has learned that lesson, is not going to. But we'll see, because I think it'd be a mind fuck to do it the opposite way, too, because us as the audience, Loki would feel betrayed if Sylvie walks out on him or fucks him over. But we, the audience, will be betrayed if Loki fucks over Sylvie. So like, I'm not sure which would be cooler or more interesting, but like it should be fun either way. And one of them's going to happen.
Well, let me propose a third option here. And it's something I've seen people talk about, and it's very appealing to me, is the idea that beyond the void, the person controlling the TVA is yet another Loki.
Yeah.
And using the TVA to keep all the other Lokis pruned so that they can't usurp his power. They can't, most definitely, they can't come together to do it, right? Because that's the thing he might fear the most. He's not strong enough to take on several Lokis at a time. They could also be setting that up to where, you know, there's an element of each of these Lokis in all the other Lokis, right? And so when you say, hey, the ends justify the means, and you have a Loki saying that, maybe that Loki in particular can grow beyond that, but Loki at large is still going to feel that way. And so when they encounter, you know, the Loki at the end of the rainbow here, it'll make a lot of sense that this Loki would have that attitude of like, hey, you wanted to rule, right? Well, I fucking did it. And the ends are justifying the means here because I'm doing the TVA thing.
Yeah. I think it's I'm pretty convinced that the what's at the other inside of the rainbow, it's through the what's on the other side of the curtain or whatever, is another Loki. And I'm kind of really talking myself into it, Sylvie, in a very Tenet kind of way. That like it's a self-closed loop that she is like, she's just Sylvie from a couple hundred years further in the future. That's like, look, yeah, we got. And, you know, we became convinced that this is the only way to do blah, blah, blah. And so that'd be a way for, like, I guess our Loki and Sylvie not to betray each other. Yeah. And this is the thing is, it's like this guy watches so much fucking television. And this was also the theme of Dark. This is like, you know, like there's been a lot of like Tenet, like there's been a lot of this stuff of like time being a Ouroboros that just kind of snakes around and eats its own tail. Like, the things that you dread the most are the things that you're going to cause because of your own weakness and fear and fragility. Like, it seems very, very perfect for Marvel to kind of crib from some of those notes that's been going around. Cause like, I think that's what this guy does. That's what they do in Rick and Morty. And it's what they've been doing so far. So I'm looking for something like that.
Yeah, we'll see. So the Lokis walk toward Eliath while formulating a plan that might be bad or might be good. They don't even know. A ship drops out of the sky and distracts Eliath long enough to demonstrate how hard it's going to be for the Lokis to sneak up on it. The pizza car pulls up and Loki introduces Sylvie and Mobius to the other Lokis. Sylvie thinks that Eliath is just the guard on the entrance to whatever's beyond the void and says she's going to enchant it.
And there's, you know, like Mobius says she's very confident, but she's a reason. She accidentally enchanted it once. So, like, if she puts a little bit of effort into it, she can probably enchant the whole damn thing. But I just thought this was incredibly effective because they have Loki coming up with like your standard movie plan, which is if I know my large animals, they're going to struggle to swallow this meal. And while it's distracted, and then you have this giant battleship that drops, which is there's your big meal.
Yeah,
but
about four seconds.
Yeah, he rips through that like I do a Chinese buffet and it's just it's done. It's horrifying how fast it happened. And there's no way that you could jump in there and get behind it or
if it touches you, you're done. Yeah,
right. Right. So it just really ramps up the stakes. And I thought that was just really shows what they're up against.
It wasn't the effects are great here. I mean, like tons of effects in this episode. We haven't talked about it yet. Maybe we will when we get to the final scene because there are just I don't know that I've seen a television show use effects more ambitiously and more frequently than Loki.
Yeah, because like I've seen like you go back to like Game of Thrones, but that stuff is like I think it's fundamentally less hard to show like, well, what if big medieval castle and dragons and than it is to like, well, what is a void look like? That's the dumping ground of all these times. And it's got a entropy monster in it.
Yeah.
And it uses a lot of same palette and stuff that we saw with the Lamentus set that we talked a bunch of shit about. I think rightfully so. But it just all works here. And I don't know why. I saw some behind the scenes footage that showed that they essentially had like 3 football fields worth of dirt and shit that they put in a soundstage and they lit it. And then they had like just piecemeal things like, you know, different wreckage they could, you know, tow in to kind of make it look different. And they shot everybody in that. I don't know why that worked so much better than whatever they did in episode 3. But it was just super solid and convincing, even though it was arguably more fantastic and weird than what they did in the other episode.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So then Ravonna goes to a cage where they're keeping B-15 to find out what drives Sylvie And B-15's like, duh, you idiot. It's revenge on whoever created the timekeepers. Do I really need to tell you that? She also tells Ravona that she'll never find the creators of the timekeepers before Sylvie does, because she just wants it. Sylvie needs it. Ravona pulls the files then on the founding of the TVA to try and find the creators. Which, we talked about the smirk here. This weird moment with a smile. Yeah, it could be probably numerous things, but I don't know. I'm expecting a trick still. Maybe I shouldn't, but the series is called Loki.
Yeah. I guess that's my other biggest like idea for who's beyond the end of this is that Ravona Renslayer is the one, and another kind of like snake eating its tail is that she herself created it and has perpetuated it even without her knowledge, because it happened in the future, not the past.
Yeah, it could be.
And she's just going to be sitting there chilling in that castle. Mm-hmm. But I agree.
And she might like even be a Loki. It's tough to say.
I was about to say that, like, that's the other thing is you could find out that she's... And I also wonder, here's another big picture theory. Mm-hmm. Maybe all the variants are Lokis because they are so good at compartmentalizing and, you know, betray, like, you know, kind of like flexible morality, and they're good at surviving and stuff like that. Like, because it would be interesting, like, thematically, if, like, the series Loki stars and is entirely populated by Loki. In retrospect.
And Loki, and if there's a Loki beyond the rainbow, a Loki is ruling over all the other Lokis,
they've been training us this entire season to suspect that. It's always a Loki. Right. Lokis are weirdly overrepresented in all the variants. Lokis are weirdly overrepresented at the purge zone. Lokis. So there's a certain amount of sense in like the fact that like, you know, like the fact that there's all these different symbols for Lokis that keep showing the different variants. Like maybe they've been trying to tell us this the whole fucking time.
Maybe, or we might be going way off the deep end, but who knows?
I'm excited to see next episode. Could be Kang all along.
Yeah, they're just going to do Kang to blast the doors off of this phase. Here we go.
It's going to be exactly like the post credit sequence in the first Avenger, where it's just going to be Kang and he's going to mug for the camera and be, ha ha, it's me, I'm Kang. And then see ya, the Fantastic Four movie, everybody.
Sure. So Mobius keeps the Loki's company while Sylvie and Loki are outside talking about the Nexus event they created with their little intimate moment. And they both deny that it was a big deal, but they end up huddled in a blanket together. Very, very cute. Sylvie's concerned that Loki will betray her, but he promises that's not who he is anymore, and then invites her to stick around once all of this is over. Tough to say if there's going to be some backstabbing here. It's like, how do you trust any of these characters? I guess we'll just find out.
I just think it's really interesting that our Loki, who... we know has gone through some character development because we followed him the whole time, is the one being asked, I don't know, Tom, Loki variant, are you going to betray me? Seems like that's what Lokis always do. And he's like, I have learned and I have developed and I have changed. And I am telling you, that's a one way street of trust that's verbally being built here. And I was really, I was really scrutinizing Sylvie's face when she's saying some of this stuff. And I don't know. I'm really geared up for her to betray our Loki and it to be a real gut punch for the audience.
Yeah, we'll see.
I don't know if this is intentional or not, or whether they just probably it's intentional. Loki can't get cold. He's a fucking frost giant. So like you're supposed to, I think, understand that this is the equivalent of being a young man at a theater.
Stretch my
yep. Oh wow, like my arm happened to drape across your shoulders, huh?
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah, because apparently Lokis are no stranger to physical love, but actual intimacy emotionally, they're both copping to not have. So like I think you're supposed to understand that Loki's kind of like a teenager not knowing what the fuck he's doing. Because for sure, unless they've forgotten their basic lore, he can't. He's immune to cold, essentially.
Sure. So then the clouds roll in. Sylvie explains the situation one last time for the people in the back row. Then gives Loki her temp pad so he can leave. He decides, I'm going to stay, help you out. But Mobius does go back to the TVA to try and burn it to the ground, I guess. Kind of excited for that part of next episode, what he's going to be up to over in TVA
land. Owen Wilson with the WoW Brigade trying to lead a...
probably Spring B-15, if I had to guess. She'd probably be invaluable.
It would be hilarious if there actually is a Nexus transit vehicle, experimental, and it looks like a jet ski.
it's a time jet ski. Happens.
He's driving on a flaming time jet ski that I think that would be really
they'll
fucking...
couch it in some like, oh, the ship is whatever you visualize it as, right?
Mm-hmm.
It'll be some magic that, you know, make it a jet ski, but it'll work.
So I will say the biggest problem with Maya Sylvie being the Loki at the end or betraying is that, like, this is a huge gamble for her to offer him the time pad.
Yeah.
But it also might be the final thing she has to do to, like, get his trust, you know, like, it could be, you know, like Owen Wilson said with her when debating whether Loki Gator, he's like, you know, he could be lying about being Loki and just playing the long con, but, you know, honestly, that just makes him more of a Loki.
Yeah.
Sometimes Lokis do the thing that they have to do to gain the maximum amount of trust. So, like, I don't know. But, like, this is the thing, because if Loki's like, ah, good luck, Sylvie, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
Or the whole scheme. Or it could be that she's still 100% whole-souled here, but when she gets to the other side and, you know, sees old woman Loki saying, oh, this is the way it's got to go, youngin'.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows?
I think there's going to be some tests for them to pass. You know, this was not the final test. They're probably saving that for the final episode, and it's gonna be a test of betrayal, right? It's not necessarily a test of like how powerful are they. It's gotta be a test of their commitment to each other.
Yeah, and it's like there's just so much stuff though, because like when all the other Lokis hear that there's a woman variant of Loki, and they kind of recoil like, oh my god, that sounds terrifying. And you know, our Loki's kind of, but that's kind of what makes her awesome. You know, it's like, yeah, you're the frog, she's a scorpion. Just watch.
So those other Lokis go off to continue surviving in the void, leaving Loki and Sylvie on their own to face Eliath. And lots of visual effects happen, just tons of them. There's smoke, there's clouds, there's rifts, there's all kinds of shit. Cities being manifest by classic Loki, who comes back, makes a fake Asgard, sacrificing himself to enable Sylvie and Loki to enchant Eliath together. And then this exit toward, I guess, the place they wanted to go opens up and they walk toward it.
And that's, like I said, I again, this is cool to me, like seeing a character of God knows what power. It doesn't matter. Captain America straining against Thanos's pinky is just as cool as Thor holding the raging heart of a star open long enough to forge a new Mjolnir, which is just as cool as old man Loki pulling, you know, illusions out of his ass to save the day. And it's how well can the person emote it? Because some people, like, they're getting a performance out of this guy, you know, like he's like really emoting like someone like trying their utmost to do illusions. What does that look like? It looks like what this fucker's doing right here.
Right.
You know, I didn't think as in when he screams, like when, like, as it's working and he's distracting and it's giving the Lokis time to realize their own personal power and the fact that like their power together is combined. And when it, you know, he gets eaten and he screams glorious purpose, it's a fucking moment that we just met this character 45 minutes ago, screen time. And yet we care enough that like he has his own arc. I thought that was cool. And it really works on a comic book level.
Yeah, somewhere in my childhood, like when I was vaccinated for, you know, smallpox and malaria or whatever, I was also vaccinated against this shit. Like, yeah, my parents just decided to give him the comic book shot too.
That's
this stuff.
One of the side effects.
Like, I didn't recognize Asgard in this scene until I started reading around. I was like, oh yeah, no, that is Asgard. So like, this shit rolls like it goes in one eye and right out the other, or you know, for me.
Yeah,
but. I don't know. In the moment, they're always fun, right? Like I really enjoyed my experience with 90% of the Marvel movies I've seen. So,
yeah,
but I couldn't tell you a damn thing that happened in any of them because
sure,
I like it in the moment and then it's gone. These things aren't sticking with me, but I understand for a lot of comic book fans, this is what they live for. And
there's
that's
something
cool.
There's also like another layer. Like there's also I talked about like how silly, you know, like the classic Loki, when we saw him last episode, it's like, this is like the Loki of a comic book adaptation in the mid 80s before they realized that dudes in yellow spandex look stupid.
Yeah.
You got, no, it's got to be fucking Kevlar and leather if you're mm-hmm. if it's going to probably a muted mustard yellow and mix yeah. in a like a really rich green. Or and maybe make it scaled, or like, because otherwise it just looks stupid. Like Lord of the Rings taught us how to like Game of Thrones, the early, like the first X-Men movie. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, of course the X-Men's uniform should look like that, because if Wolverine's rolling around in the giant cowl with like bright yellow and blue underwear, it's going to look stupid.
I mean, look at the old Superman movies. Yeah.
But there's something cool and almost like a Watchman, like old Loki screaming glorious purpose in his classic 70s Stan Lee, Stan Ditko outfit is just as cool as, like, this reminded me a lot of the original Night Owl in the Watchmen movie mm-hmm. when, you know, looks he's getting beat up by these gang members and he's and he gets one, as the old man, he gets one solid punch on him. And instantly he's a young man punching Captain Axis, and he's getting that one moment of glory, and he's about to get stomped yeah. to death, but he's happy. And I felt like, because, you know, it works, like, because, you know, the old Night Owl had a ridiculous costume. There's something pathetic, but it adds to the moment. And putting this Loki in that costume, like I said, like it's not the leftovers, but it's a pretty good facsimile of the comic book version of what if Marvel had written a leftovers plot for Loki, it would kind of look like this. And it got it kind of went places for me.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. I mean, I don't have many of the many complaints about the CG in this show. It seems like maybe they saved up a bunch of the budget for this.
Yeah,
but this whole show has been laden with, you know, really great set design, some very good, if occasionally shoddy, CG, and they really just pull out all the stops in this. And I can't wait to see what they do with the next episode, because visually, I think they could go weird places with this at the end. You think of some of the stuff they've done in the movies that doesn't, you know, cost a ton of money, right?
Right.
It can't cost any more than what they've done in this episode. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what next episode looks like.
The only thing that concerns me, and this is like, I felt like ice water poured down when I was reading Alan Sepinwall's review yesterday, where he's like, you know, it seems like next episode is going to be really something. It's going to be something beyond just people punching each other in energy clouds. He goes, but I felt the same way about WandaVision, and the whole finale episode was just that. Mm-hmm. I was kind of, I didn't really, you know, and like, you know, it does seem, you know, if you go to the thesis that like Marvel's just not going to do anything really definitive or groundbreaking in these television shows, they're going to save that for the movies, at least for this initial phase of integration. Mm-hmm. But I really do hope they swing for some kind of fence, because I do think you could do something impactful to visually and impactful to Loki, the character, that doesn't like break the Marvel universe in a way that like in a new Avengers movie can.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like you can't do the snap in a Marvel Cinematic TV series. You can only do that in a two-part Avengers thing.
Yeah.
But can you like gut the character of Loki and you know, turn and really develop? Sure. Because like really Loki becoming even more of a good guy was already the trajectory people were on with him with the Infinity War plotline. We were wanting Loki to be that. So him doing all this development off screen to get back to there and being a little bit better, mm-hmm. The cinema audience is already primed for it. That shit you can do. So,
well, this is what I wonder, like, where are they going to leave our Loki? Because it's not our Loki, right? Our Loki's dead. Do they bring this Loki back into the fold in the movies? Do we see this version of Loki showing up in a film down the line to, you know, re-up that character that we thought was gone forever?
I think so, because here's the pitch. All the Rick and Morty guys got to do is like, get this, man. We had this whole thing where our Rick and Morty took over the universe of a dead Rick and Morty. And then one of the Mortys threw that into the face of the Summer character, mm-hmm. of the sister character. It's like, hey, your actual brother's body's moldering out behind the shed. And then they keep doing stuff with that, you know? I think that like if he went into the pitch meeting and be like, let us do this, and then you can have things like when Thor is like, you know, I've never trusted, like, Loki's like, I'm not that brother, I'm a different brother. Like, it's cool. Like, it's it's something that like you can't, it's, you know, like it, I don't know. It adds a little extra spice to it. And, you know, since it does seem like the new phase of Marvel is going to be all about timelines colliding and multiverses and shit like that, having those mechanics where it's like, you know, what does Thor think about his brother? What does Loki think about this? This isn't his brother, but it is, but it's not. I think that shit is like, I mean, fuck, it's fascinating through five seasons of Rick and Morty. Why wouldn't it be through a couple movies of Thor?
Right. Yeah, it could be.
Especially if they're wanting to replace Chris Hemsworth anyway. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, just stick him in the void and have him meet five other versions of himself. One's a frog and then go with Frog Loki. Fuck it.
Yeah, make Natalie Portman be, I've heard people speculating that she'll be Lady Thor. So like you just put, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things you can do with this multiverse shit. Yeah, they managed to enchant it just in time, rip a portal through, just like she said. This was the guard dog. They're this decrepit castle at the end of time. Somebody's in there. And who is it going to be?
Another robot. No, I don't know.
That'd be funny if it's just a bigger robot. We've talked a lot about the theories of who it could be. Sylvie, an older version of Sylvie. Our Loki could end up sitting the throne, a different Loki variant, Renslayer.
Yep.
There's other, like if you paid attention to our feedback section, you'll also know there's a popular theory about Kang the Conqueror, which. This Eliath character is very tied to, I don't know if you did any research on this, but he's very tied to the Kang the Conqueror plotline. Like the Kang, like this guy has got a time empire. This Eliath's time empire is like three times the size of Kang's, and Kang has to burn like a time and space like fire line between his timeline and Eliath to keep Eliath from coming and consuming everything that he's worked so hard to. So these are very, you know, connected characters. Like if you see Silver Surfer show up, you should probably be looking for Galactus to come next, right? So Eliath is very connected to Kang. But I don't think Kang is going to show up next episode. He's too big. I don't think they would have Thanos. Like if this was the Thanos, I don't think Thanos would show up at the end of a random, you know, WandaVision episode. Like, yeah. I just don't. I think that's the one fatal flaw of all the Marvel speculation happening right now is everyone. Clearly, the MCU is going in that direction. I just don't think they're going to get there yet. There's too much time left. Yeah. So,
I mean, the good news is we will find out next week.
Yeah. And there's a lot of combinations. Like, you know, we've heard about this he who remains, who is the last sentient character left at the end of time. And is trusted with like restarting the universe and seeding it with knowledge from. There's a popular theory that he who remains is going to be a Loki. So like you can remix the stuff, but like I just don't think if Kang is going to be the Thanos of the next phase, I just don't think he's showing up just yet. But gotcha. We'll see. Let's take a quick break and then we'll get to feedback, shall we?
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe!
Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Okay, we're back. If you want to send us feedback, it's easy. Just go to Marvel or send an email to marvel@baldmove.com and it'll make its way through the timeverse to our equidistant temporal reality. The first to do so is Ryan in the Nexus event known as Kansas City. I feel like the Nexus events between the two Lokis is more that Loki throughout the different timelines are supposed to be bad so that the heroes can be their best self. That's something Owen Wilson opined back in episode one. Mm-hmm. The reason Loki does the bad things he does is that he doesn't love himself and is scared that he will be alone his whole life. Him having feelings for Lady Loki could be construed that he has found a way to love himself and he doesn't feel like he'll be alone his whole life. It fundamentally changes the core, his core self according to the sacred timeline. Yes. And you got to wonder what it would do to that Loki if his self betrays him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the, I think the most interesting possibility.
I mean, it's the most interesting thing they've done with this show, right? It's right. The theme that I think they hit on with this show that makes so much sense is like Loki, you know, working against or with himself, right? It's all about Loki. This entire series is about Loki, so it's aptly named. And yeah. I just love the way that they're playing around with that, with all these different characters who are essentially him, and he has to figure out how to navigate that. It's, you know, it's not unlike an experience. It's very relatable, right? Like you have a lot of parts of yourself that are, you know, helping you get through your day, helping you survive. As classic Loki says, it's all there ever was. That's all there is. We're just trying to survive. And sometimes we're at odds with ourselves. Sometimes ourselves are actively working against us and bringing us down. And I think that's like the heart of this show that has made it work for me is just understanding human beings, the human experience through the lens of so many different Lokis.
100%. And I think that's something they do really well in Rick and Morty too, which is again a big background for Waldron. Is the show that realistically, like, you know, if you start improving yourself, self-improvement is not like a linear, like straight line. You get better and better, higher up the rung. Sometimes you roll down the hill, you regress, you get yourself healthy, and then you find yourself in a relation, you know, you used to abuse people and use people, and you've stopped that, and you understand why, and you're not going to do it anymore. But then your next relationship is a user and abuser. And what do you do with that? You know, I think that's like a logical step that if Loki has gotten a hold of a system that makes him less selfish and more capable of loving himself and therefore loving others, his first relationship is with an abused Loki that fucks him up. Like, is that going to cause him to regress? Is that going to, like, that stuff is just really interesting. And it's one of the things that why Rick and Morty is not just a stupid science fiction cartoon. There's heart to it. Yeah. And there's a realism to, you know, the protagonist's personal development and lack thereof that I think could be useful in the Marvel universe. And it seems like something they're more willing to wrestle with post snap. Like there is more tragedy. There is more people with the heroes. Like so far, a lot of the stories have been told is like the heroes processing their trauma of, you know, getting their life snapped and reintegrated and all that kind of stuff. So like, yeah, it's more mature storytelling. And I think that's one of the reasons it's interesting that Marvel's had this decade plus, is like they literally had 12-year-olds watching them, and now they're 22-year-olds, and like maybe those people are in the mood for a little bit more mature storytelling, and they can indulge stuff with that. I think that's a great idea, and I hope they can pull it off. So move on to Frankie. I'd love to give some thoughts on some of the core themes of the show. In particular, why Loki is important in the scenario. Loki is a god of mischief, a chaos agent. The TVA is interested in creating a specific outcome, and that outcome is the heroes need to win. Loki's there to enable the heroes to move forward. To have this come about, Loki has to follow some basic guidelines. He's got to be bad. He needs to be the foil to the heroes. And to do this, often Loki has to have self-pity and self-hate. The reason Mobius chose this time loop as torture for Loki is he knows the line Sif delivered, "No one will ever love you," is the truth of Loki's nature, or at least his deepest fear. Mm-hmm. He does what he does to get attention from those he loves and to make himself feel loved. He does this because he can't love himself. This doesn't mean that he can't change. It just means that Loki has to die to serve the hero's story. For example, in Endgame, Loki is redeemed and dies to save Thor and to drive him, which is, you know, classic literary trope. The problem comes when Loki finds self-worth and begins to love himself, becomes a good character to serve no one but himself. The relationship he formed with Sylvie is as much about Loki learning to love himself as it was about loving someone else. This fundamentally changes the nature of chaos in the universe, creating a situation where heroes are not clearly defined and timeline's outcome is not clearly denoted. It's why it's a massive nexus event. It completely changes how history could unfold if the good guys and the bad guys are not crystal clear in the universe, especially in the context of these gods, creating insanely unpredictable and unmanageable outcomes that would splinter into infinite timelines. I think they're onto something here about that's the reason it became such a huge nexus event, is Loki learning to love himself through a slightly different version of himself. Mm-hmm. Which it's funny because we made all the incest jokes, right? When Owen Wilson's like, this is just fucked up. You look, what kind of narcissistic self, but like, that's what we say. Like, you can't have a positive relationship with someone else until you learn to love yourself.
Right.
Right. So Loki being the first one, like maybe that's why it became such a nexus. He's not plotting and stuff. He's just falling in love with himself. I like that. Greg E has a question for you about the entirety of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. When has a villain been introduced in the climax of the story? Oh, Greg, you're preaching to the choir here, I think. All the speculation of Mephisto and WandaVision and Kang showing up in Loki seems to be ignoring the entire history of the MCU, both in the TV and the movies. A villain might be revealed as a surprise turncoat, like the Ironmonger, or using an already established mechanic, like Dormammu, but the first appearance of an antagonist has rarely, if ever, been during the climax. It's like all the Azor Ahai stuff from Game of Thrones. It's never mentioned in the show, so I never really believed it would come up in the final season. Marvel has used established, well, I don't got time to relitigate Game of Thrones, but let's keep moving on. It was never mentioned in the show, so I never really believed it would come up in the final season. Marvel has used established storylines with some tweaks before as an outline, but not as Shyamalan style twist endings. Like I said, that's my take on this too, is that I can't think of a single instance where Marvel has done this, even in the movies. You know, post credit hints and teases and things like that. But like Kang being behind the man behind the curtain, like, I don't know. It seems like a bridge too far. I would love to be proved wrong, because I would instantly make these shows a lot more interesting to cover, because like right now, I feel like I can if it turns out that this is not Kang and this is just like a self-contained Loki story, then I'm going to feel like I can skip all of the Marvel shit and only come back and watch them if I want background detail on a movie that I'm really into. Like if I watch Immortals and they say, oh man, if you watch What If episode, blah, 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 which by the way, What If's trailer drops today and it looks pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Then it'll really give you a deeper understanding of these characters. That's the kind of shit that like, okay, fine. But like, yeah, if these are all kind of self-contained character pieces, then I think that I think as fans, we should feel free to skip them and, you know, treat like kind of like the Avengers, you know, like you don't need to see Thor the Dark World to understand what's going on in Avengers 2, right? Age of Ultron. It helps, but they'll give you enough. I feel like that's the thing. It's like now the MCU is the mainline thing, and these are the side quests that you can take or leave.
Yeah, I never saw the Ant-Man movies, and I don't feel like I was lost in the last two Avengers movies.
Yeah, you're just, you know, like there's a little bit like, and there is delight in recognizing, you know, when you see Scott's van in the impound cage post snap, and like there's, you can hear a buzz in the audience because half of them know, oh shit, this is Ant-Man's vehicle, and he was last seen in the fucking quantum foam universe or whatever. But like, if you don't, you're going to know all this within 30 seconds of exposition, you know.
They tell you, yeah, the Marvel, I mean, they do it in this episode, right? Marvel loves to get in there and recap right before the big event to make sure everybody's on the same page as to why we're fighting. And then
because they love to make money. And if they make a thing where like everyone has to watch everything, or they don't feel like they're, the problem with serialized stuff like that is in the history, like usually there's less and less investment because people feel like, oh, Jesus, like I would love to get on this big pop culture phenomenon, but I'm not up to sitting and spending 3 weekends watching movies to get there.
Right.
Marvel's like, fuck all that. Come on in. You can jump in at any time. We'll catch you up and we'll just wow you with the special effects and the charisma of our actors, and you don't have to worry about it. And that's smart. And I don't think they're going to abandon it anytime soon.
Yeah, that would be crazy.
So I do wonder because like if three shows out of three don't reward the speculation, like if all the crazy, like, oh, like this is going to be this big villain, oh, this must be pointing to this big villain, oh, this is going to kick off, if it becomes a little like The Boy Who Cried Wolf again, there's tons of stuff in terms of Easter eggs and stuff like, and I think people that are casual fans but want to be in the know are going to seek that stuff out. But I don't know if these shows, you know, deserve 90 minutes of discussion every single time. Probably not, but we'll see. We'll see next week. Maybe Kang comes up and blows our fucking minds, and it takes us through the leftovers. Max Richter plays some piano and we're like fucking hooked. We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see. Sergeant Drano has a quick take on the huge Nexus event spike in Lamentis. Ordinarily, there wouldn't be any branches caused by variants in the apocalypse, right? Because everyone in the apocalypse dies, but when Loki and Sylvie are on the verge of dying in Lamentis, the TVA saw a huge branch appearing in the sacred timeline, heading quickly towards the red line. My takeaway is that it must mean that the continued existence of one of them, either Loki or Sylvie, must therefore be absolutely necessary to the continued existence of the sacred timeline. Interesting. So if one of our two main Lokis, Loki or Sylvie, is vital to the sacred timeline, it seems to me that the most likely reveal is that one of them is actually the real power behind the fake timekeeper robots, or more precisely, we ultimately come that power retroactively / will always have become that power. I mean, this lines up with some of my popular, I didn't think of this, you know, because I actually like the idea of Loki self-loving himself being a Nexus event, but you're right. Like, if Sylvie is the timekeeper and she was about to die for realsy, that would be a huge divergence from the sacred timeline.
Yeah.
And it also makes sense from a supervillain. Like, the sacred timeline is just your continued existence, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. If they bring whatever version of Loki must be essential in this scenario to, you know, the other timeline, then you could still say that was the sacred timeline at all, the one that we're familiar with from, you know, the Avengers movies and stuff. Or if they don't do that, you would have to say that this is the supposed sacred timeline that we're on, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
As long as
Loki. It's interesting. I will say also that I think Nexus events are created when the thing that derails the timeline happens. It's not like it's not that like, oh, we're getting close to a Nexus event and so things are going toward the red line. It's like the Nexus event happens and then you have a certain amount of time after that to prune the consequences of that. In that case, to me, the catalyst here, the Nexus event, is actually them forming some intimate relationship, some bond. Because she never dies, right? Or whichever Loki is necessary, like Sylvie, Loki, whatever, they don't die. So the Nexus event would never happen unless yeah, you're just right. Saying like someone is protecting that timeline, that version of Loki.
Or maybe because like maybe it's the concrete thing is like the time pad, like they were supposed to get to and bluff their way on board or recharge the time pad, and when the ship got destroyed and they had, like, you know, they were left with nothing. That was the divergence. Because, like, if her death is the divergence, then, like, it seems like there's no way to stop it because her death
would happen. And then
there's nothing. And they already can say, they already also told us that once a Nexus happens, they can't rewind to stop that. So it has to be like some kind of like, you know, safety rails around the sacred timeline to where events that threaten the other thing, like there's gotta be some kind of like cascading.
You're right. Thing. Cause like, you know, if Natalie Portman's on the sacred timeline, she could get hit by a bus tomorrow.
Right.
And yeah, if that wasn't meant to happen, then they have no way of fixing that. Right.
Yeah. But like they like if they got a Nexus divergence when like the green light that controlled the bus went haywire, then the TVA's guys come in there and nuke that part of it. Okay. Then they're back on. So like,
maybe the ship that could be it.
So like,
and well, the also, ship was like, always supposed to blow up, though, right? They just weren't to be there. So the Nexus event would have been them coming to Lamentis in the first place.
Or not getting there in time, or bickering a little bit too much, or the guard suspecting them instead of not suspecting. I don't know. That's all good questions. I think Michael Waldron could also be like, hey, you don't know which time, like what point in the timeline in the TVA headquarters that Owen Wilson and was it B-15 or is it Ravenna that were watching the thing like explode? You know, like that could have been the moment they kissed. It could have been the moment that the rock hit the ship. It could have, because like, how do you know that this is following the exact flow of time? You can't. Like, even in just if it's just standard cinematography, you take out a timeline. Like if you have camera cuts and stuff, you don't know that this is all happening like 24 style. But when you've got like a TVA that's outside of time and monitoring time and can go in here, like it's even more so. So I also think he could be like, it's, you know, there's some leeway into what is the Nexus event and when it happens and all that shit.
Yeah. So. And I don't want to inject authorial intent here. So just make up your own minds about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Garrett writes in and says, I noticed in most of recent podcast episode and the previous, there were some gripes about the way the show looked, with much of the blame being ascribed to the use of the volume that was pioneered in the production of The Mandalorian. Joanna Robinson, in her most recent episode of Still Watching Loki, interviewed director Kate Herron and asked specifically about their use of the volume. Kate says they did not use it, and for all the shots were done with a standard blue screen. Wow. Maybe it would have looked better if they'd actually used the volume. So there's two things. I've learned, and one of the reasons I don't really do interviews is because they bullshit and lie all the time. All the time.
It seems like such a petty thing to lie about.
But like they do, and like, it could be because
the reputation of the volume.
Well, it could be that she doesn't honestly know what the volume is, or like this is not technically the volume because it's kind of like the volume 2.0, which is called the space. But like, okay, and I had a couple of people taking me to task. I was like, well, it's not the volume. Okay, like the look. Look, the volume is not some sacred fucking technology that like is always awesome. I actually, with my own eyeballs, looked and it looked like the fucking volume to me. I didn't see behind the scenes or anything like that. But like, regardless, it's just shittily composited and executed special effects.
Sure.
And like, it's not the own on my complaining about it that I think people think it is by saying it's not actually the volume. Okay, fine.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we're ascribing the problem to the wrong piece of technology, but it still didn't look amazing. Yeah.
Right. Like, it could be something, but like, I don't know. It seemed to me like the volume or volume like technology, because like if it's just green screen compositing, I'm sorry, that's borderline inexcusable. Just fucking redo it. If you didn't do it right and it's not matching and you didn't get the it's looking washed out, then fucking redo it. What the hell? You know, the stuff was all delayed because of COVID anyway. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, whereas like, well, if it's just as good as we got, it's the volume and we can't redo it because there's no green screen to fucking recomposite. It's like it's an in-camera trick. OK, so I don't know. Like I said, these people lie. They get things wrong. They're, you know, the director is doing 1,000 things. Like they might not even personally supervise a shooting. This could have been B-unit shit that I have a problem with. So like, I just don't know. And also, like, even if it's not the volume, well, then they fucked up some other process that was bad. So
hopefully it's not the volume. I hear they're making a really big one for Thor, Love and Thunder.
I heard the same. And that's the other thing is like, also, it's not an indictment of the technology. I even said like they crushed it in most of The Mandalorian, and like going forward, I'm sure they will. It's just something that like I think integrating any kind of new special effect technology. Some people do it great. Some people do it. So anyway, that's it. If it's at the volume and the volume's perfect and flawless and perfect in all its activities, and I retract my slurs against the volume, episode 3 still was shitty special effects. And I know that because episode 5 fucking nailed it.
Sure. Yeah.
Sean, I'm going to lay my predictions out there. All this talk about Loki being a survivor is going to pay off with him being the MCU version of He Who Remains, the last Universal survivor and creator of the TVA Timekeepers. Yeah, we talked about this and the fact that like this could be remixed into also a Loki. Mm-hmm. It could be She Who Remains, which would be an interesting kind of gender bend on that.
Alligator Who Remains.
Alligator Loki.
What if it's just a giant alligator Loki?
Oh my god.
In the castle.
That would be kind of because also, man, there's even okay, if I
oh god.
I want to take this theory straight.
Okay.
Because there's a line where Loki points out the classic Loki. He's like, "What the fuck? You're the one wearing the horns."
Mm-hmm.
As if that's like the bigger the horns, the more in charge the Loki is. And President Loki had the big horns on. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you taking orders from this child? Well, you know who else had a full fucking set of horns in that scene? Alligator Loki.
It's true.
And it would be Rick and Morty as fuck if Alligator Loki is the He Who Remains.
I want to see another layer to the Wizard of Oz. I want there to be a gigantic Alligator Loki that they have mm-hmm. to like encounter. But then that also be like, you know, a Wizard of Oz smokescreen kind of thing for the real. I mean, I think it would be too ridiculous for me. I would be probably done with Loki if it were literally Alligator Loki is the one pulling the strings. For the Frog in Central Park episode of the show.
What if Alligator Loki is just a enchantment of the classic Loki?
Okay.
And then you find out they're like, well, that's been you all the time. Did you eat someone's hand? Like that would be kind of funny.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm an official subscriber too. I hope that it's Alligator Loki in some fashion.
God.
They just rotoscope its mouth so it looks like it's speaking English, or maybe it's just hissing and then they have subtitled dialogue in some kind of alligator script.
Yeah,
that's what I want to see. That's what I'm wanting to see from the end of this Loki. And it would be Rick and Morty as fuck, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the emails we got. If you'd like to send us one for next week, we will have one more, of course, episode of coverage of Loki. It's coming out next week. It'll be the final one. Get all your final thoughts to us at marvel@baldmove.com. And again, if you like, if you're interested in a preview, we got a no spoiler take of Black Widow out tonight. I'm very excited to get back to a Marvel cinematic experience. We'll have a review out tonight. And if you're a club member or a Patreon at support.baldmove.com, you can hear a whole spoiler take. So if there's any post credit Gator Loki sightings, we'll be sure to let you know. So. but we'll be back next week with more Marvel Loki coverage. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.